Morning. Morning. We all knew I'd come crawling back, didn't we? Here we go. You know what? I've just been sitting right over there every weekend, so it's only a matter of about, you know, a couple hundred feet. They did bring my old office stuff actually up here on the stage, you know, as part of this. And I was looking at it, and I was looking around, I was like, this would have worked. This could have been, we got a little crowded on the weekend, but we could have figured that out, kind of two little button notes on that video. One was, just want to reinforce, it's an incredible, huge, generous gift that somebody's allowed us to be in this office space downtown to get this thing that I'm part of started. So incredible encouragement to us, my little kind of prideful issues aside, incredible encouragement, great gift. And then two, full disclosure, I now have a door. So the fortress of solitude has been restored, there is balance in the universe, you know, things are good again. You know, you hear that and you think about, well, that's, you know, kind of a silly little issue to have affecting you at a deep level like that. And you know what? It is. But I think any of you, you kind of think about, you identify some past times in your life where the surface thing you thought was the issue really wasn't. When you really got beneath it, you realized that it was pride driving you and driving your dissatisfaction or whatever, in that moment. I wonder how many of you would say, you know, there's some time in my life, maybe it wasn't work, maybe it was work, but maybe it was a family issue, maybe it was involvement in the community or whatever, but what at first you thought was the issue, really what was going on was your pride was being hurt. How many of you would say you've had that in your past at some point? Yeah. Keep your hands up for a second. I think this is a good exercise. I think that those of you that have their hands up right now, this is a spiritual condition called pride that we're going to dig into during this series. Those of you that don't have your hands up, this is a spiritual condition called lying. And we'll get to you at some point. Just hold on, okay? We will get to that. We all have this, you know, kind of in some way kind of driving us. And so what we want to do in this series is we want to unpack this, and that the roots of pride kind of stretch throughout our life in different ways that we never kind of really think about. And if we kind of start digging into it, we realize how deep its roots go in our life. And so what we're going to do is we're going to start at the root today. We're going to start at Genesis and kind of the start of this problem. Brian talked a little bit last week about the creation account in Genesis and kind of the fall of where sin entered the world and all of that. And the basic story was, you know, that God created the world and he created this planet and he created people to be caretakers of the planet and to help take care of it. And he gave them incredible freedom with limits. And the one limit was, he said, you can eat of any tree that's in this incredible place except for this one. And I don't know if it looked exactly like this, but let's say it did for a second, except for this one tree, and that was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And there was something about that that God was saying, I don't want you to partake of this because you're not made for that weight. It would not be healthy for you to take on that role, so it's for your own good. But yet we see what happens is temptation comes into the world. You know, temptation comes in, and through Satan kind of taking the form as a serpent, he tempts them by appealing to them of that, you know what, God's holding out on you. He's not protecting you. He's holding out on you. So we pick that up here. This is in the book of Genesis, chapter 3, verse 1. He said to the woman, this being the serpent, said to the woman, did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? The woman said to the serpent, we may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it or you will die. You will not surely die, the serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Now, there's a couple things going on here that I think are interesting. The first one is the way evil tends to work on our life is it takes a truth and just twists it a little bit. So there's some familiar ring to it. It sounds true, but yet it is so far off of what the truth was. And so what does the serpent do here? He says, did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? Well, no, that's not what he said. He said, you can eat from any tree except for this one. So evil makes it look like God is saying something that he's not there. And of course, the woman responds, well, actually, he said we could eat fruit from the trees, but just, you know, not this one. But the next piece that goes on that I think is the more critical one here, the phrase here at the end where it says, a serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Oh, you will be like God. God's holding out on you. You can be God. And so the creation tries to become the creator. And the balance of the universe is upset and takes on, by taking of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, takes on this weight of choice in the world. Choosing to be good and evil. And what comes out of it is choice is all this toxic waste that flows into our world ever since. And so because of these choices and this toxic waste that flows out, new words have to be invented to reflect this waste in our world. New words like murder and rape and evil and lying and racism and war and bitterness. And all these words flow out in the world that are a result of us taking on this weight we were never meant to have. And we did it because in the name of control. God's holy now is, I want to call all the shots. I do not want to believe that there is a creator that is not me that maybe has a call on my life. So that what happens is over time, the result of these choices that come spewing out in our world is that we are basically degraded. And what happens is actually in the name of trying to become like God results in defacing our humanity. In trying to become like God, we become less of ourselves. Trying to become God, we become less of ourselves. And at the root of this is this pride issue of saying, I'm going to call all the shots. I want to have control. I do not like the idea of being dependent on my creator. I want to be independent. And so that flows out in our world down through today and throughout history. So, you know, back in December during the Christmas series, we looked one weekend at King Herod and how this thing influenced him. And Herod, King Herod, at the time that baby Jesus was born, he had a chair as well. He had a chair and his chair was the throne. And he was the king. He was the king of that area of Palestine. And then he starts to hear rumors. He hears these rumors that this baby has been born king of the Jews. Is very threatened by that. And his Herod doesn't want to share this throne with anyone. He doesn't want to give it up. So Herod kicks into this throne preservation strategy. And his throne preservation strategy is he will eliminate any threat to the throne. He was known for doing that anyway, the kind of man that he was. But what he did was he ordered the slaughter of all of the baby Jewish boys below a certain age. And it began one more track throughout history of people that felt that by killing Jews they could get their way. So he orders the slaughter of all these babies as a throne preservation strategy. He wants to protect his throne. And the issue was he felt threatened. He wasn't going to get out of his chair. At the root of that was this pride thing for him. And it flows down to us as well. We find ourselves doing that as well. Maybe in different ways, and I know that those of us in here, we are at all different places on the spectrum as far as where you are spiritually exploring. We're at all different places of the kind of questions we have about God, all different places about what you feel about God, all different places about what you feel about the Bible, what you feel about Jesus, and we've created this place to be that place where we could come and ask those kind of questions. So that's cool. I can tell you, wherever you are on that spectrum, I can guarantee you that you have had some truth revealed in your life that you know is truth and you've acted against it. And in some way, you've known what was true and what was right, but for some sort of self-preservation purposes, you have acted against it. You have basically said, I don't want to get out of the chair. I think I know what's right, even though it's going to have to go against what I know. All of us have this issue. All of us have this issue of not wanting to get out of the chair. And what it is it's a pride thing. So, you know, you wonder, you know, what do you do about that? Because I think one of the challenges that we have is when we tend to think about something like humility, we tend to think it in terms of some people are just humble and some people aren't. You know, there's prideful people and there's humble people, just kind of the way you are. So it's just like whether you're born and, you know, you're tall or not, you're either humble or you're not. And we tend to think that the really good things in this life, they come natural. And we never stop to think that maybe in a broken world, there are a lot of great things that do not come natural. That humility might be something that doesn't come natural to us, but that we should work on. And that's something that, that's the way that Jesus talked about it. There's this one part in the Bible, well, there's several parts in the Bible where Jesus' closest followers, his disciples, apparently they've been having yet again another argument about who's the greatest. Who's the greatest? It was kind of a continual theme for them, kicking around. I don't know if they had some kind of pool going or what that it was of who's the greatest? Who's the greatest? You know, and, there's this one part in the book of Matthew. And Matthew is one of the four what's called Gospels in the Bible. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There are four different historical records of Jesus' life and his teaching while he was here on earth. So in the Gospel of Matthew, it records where Jesus is talking about this. This is Matthew chapter 18, beginning in verse 1. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" You know, here's this question again. So who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? He, this being Jesus, called a little child and had him stand among them. And he said, "I tell you the truth. Unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Now, this is a great passage for a lot of reasons. But I think one of the things that's a little dangerous the way sometimes we come at the Bible is we will tend to say, well, you know, I read this passage and here's what it means to me. And somebody else says, oh, this is what it means to me. And this is what it means to me. And all these different kind of meanings. And some of that is good because what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to take the Bible and apply it to our life. That's called application. But we also need to realize that to start, we have to understand what that passage was saying, because there was a person writing it who had a meaning, and that is what it means. And so what we need to do is we need to understand the context of a passage before we do that and then apply it to our life. And so, for instance, like with this passage, I think sometimes, you know, kind of look at it and say, oh, well, Jesus was saying, you know, you need to become like little children. Oh, you know what? Well, children are very creative, and we tend to lose our creativity over time. We need to be more creative. Or Jesus was saying we need to be more like little children. Children are more joyful. We need to not worry about things so much. We need to be joyful. Or children tend to be very accepting of other people. We need to be more accepting of other people. All those things, good things. And all those things may be things that elsewhere in the Bible it points to. But in this case, not the point. There's one point that Jesus was making when he said this. And he doesn't leave any room for kind of error on this. And it's right here. It says, he said, therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. It's a point about humility and nothing else. This is a point about humility. Now, the other thing that's interesting here is the way Jesus talks about this, because he doesn't say, therefore, whoever is humble like this child. No, Jesus uses a verb here. He says, whoever humbles. Apparently, we can work at becoming more humble. We can actually work on humility. Whoever humbles himself. And so Jesus calls us to a life of actually working on our humility. Because in a broken world, it's a great thing that doesn't come natural. So we can work on humility. So what I want to do is, I want to share some things that, you know, I've kind of discovered. And, you know, I want to caveat, I am not the poster boy for humility, you know, in any way. I've got some real stuff, these roots that God's continually working out of me. But I have, about in the last 10 years or so, been on this journey where I feel like God's been kind of revealing some things to me of ways I can work on this in my life. So the first very practical way I think that we have opportunities to work on being more humble and rooting out this pride thing in our life is we need to practice being insulted. We need to practice being insulted. Now, that sounds weird, and that kind of goes against our grain, because in this world, one of the things we do is we develop defense mechanisms so by people will not insult us. Or if they do insult us, they will get it right back, and they will learn their lesson, and they won't mess with us. You know, kind of thing. That's, you know, kind of, you know, and this was what, for a long, so for instance, I remember the first time somebody pointed out in the Bible that it said we were not to repay insult with insult. That really bummed me out. That really, because I felt like this was a unique gift I had. And now you're taking away one of my key tools here. And so I was like, wait a second. It doesn't. I had to go to the Bible and I found it. And I was like, okay, let's try another translation. Nope, it's there as well. Oh boy. You know, what are we going to do? I was kind of bummed at that because I'm big on, you know, kind of the justice of the situation. You insult me, I'm coming right back at you. I'm coming right back at you. And so it's a bit of a challenge to me. But it is one of those key moments where we do not repay insult with insult, where we have a key opportunity to grow in humility. But a challenge for me. So for instance, and you know, before I share the story, you need to, you know, kind of give me a little grace here. Understand kind of the frame of mind I was in. You need to know that I am no one's definition of a handyman. Okay? You know, I kind of just say that out. So for instance, my friends that know me, none of them have ever called me up and asked me to come over and help install a new dishwasher. Because they know, you know, that, you know, not me. So for instance, I do not know how to install a garbage disposal. I do not know how to fix a broken electrical circuit. I do not know how to hammer a nail. You know, there's, you know, kind of some of these things that I just don't have. And, you know, and people hear the, you know, my stories and they say, oh, that happens to everyone. Don't be so hard on yourself. You know, so they hear that, okay, we all have put together some furniture and then had some pieces left over that we didn't know what to do with. You know, it happens to everybody. You know, we all have hung a picture and it's sideways and can't get it fixed. You know, we all have sawed into our own leg with a handsaw and needed 9 stitches in the emergency room. You know, it happens. It happens, Brian. You know, I hear you on that. So, you know, I'm trying not to be hard on myself, but nonetheless, and I've even tried to get our house on the Go Cincinnati list, and it's never made the cut. You know, every year just kind of doesn't quite make the cut. So this is a while back, and I had to spend the whole day doing home improvement. I was kind of fixing things around the house, so I was not in a good mood. Because one, it wasn't going well. I was frustrated. Not how I really want to be spending my dream day anyway. So I was doing this, but then I had to go pick up my son John at one point. So I had just enough time in running this errand and picking him up to stop at the hardware store on the way and get this piece that I needed. And it was going to be tight for time, but I felt like I could just do it. So I did. You know, I got in the car and I stopped off at what we will just call a major big box home improvement store. Okay? I don't want to disparage any individual store or brand here, so you can imagine which one, you know, it might be. Stopped at this major big box home improvement store to get this piece, and it was a mess. It was a mess. The shelves were messed up. Stuff wasn't in the right place. The labels were wrong. All this. And I'm in this one part of the store trying to get this part for our stove that I'm trying to get. And it's just so messed up. I can't see where anything is. And there's like 7 different versions of this piece that I need. It's not clear. And so I see somebody that's working there and I bring them over to help me, kind of to help me find the right part. Now, it's clear that this guy is not having his dream day either. As a matter of fact, be honest with you, I don't think he wants to be working here. You know, I think he's like got a novel he's working on or something, and he just doesn't want to be part of this. So he's not having his dream day. So he responds to me by, in a very sarcastic way, reading me exactly what the sign says on the shelf. Now, this is not helpful. So then I'm like, okay, all right, little man in the orange apron, you want to do this? You know, we can do this. I know how to do this. So, all right, here we go. You know, and so I come back at him and I point out that one, I know how to read, and two, I don't think he's very good at his job. You know, so I point him out there. And so we're having this little exchange there, and it was either right before that or right after that somebody from Crossroads saw me in the aisle and came up to introduce themselves. Yeah. That was a little weird. Kind of deal with that and I never do find the part. I don't think they have it. So then I'm like, I don't know what to do. So I just leave. You know, I leave. So I'm walking out of the store and I get kind of close to the doors and all of a sudden I feel this prompting. It's one of those promptings I don't like because it's, Brian, you need to go back. You know, that was not cool. You know, that, why do you mean go back? I'm in a hurry. Now I'm late to pick up John. No, Brian, you need to go back. What do you mean? The guy deserved it. Can you believe that? Throwing that insult. Brian, you did not repay insult with insult. You need to go back. Oh. Now, I have had enough of these promptings in my life, and I have not acted on them enough, and I have acted on them enough to know the way the rest of my day is going to feel if I don't act on it. So I'm like, okay, in this case at least, do the right thing. All right, I'll go back. All right. So I go back in, go to the aisle. He's not there. He's not there. I can't find him. Go to the next aisle. He's not there. I go through every single aisle in the store, and I cannot find this guy anywhere. I don't know if he's gone on his break. I don't know if I was the straw that broke the camel's back and he's resigned, threw his apron down, stormed out in tears. You know, I don't know, but he's not there. I look all over. I can't find him. Now, this is what pastors refer to as a spiritual freebie, because I tried to do the right thing, but I didn't have to. And that's what really you're going for in this life. That's the, you want to look for those, because those are special moments. Looked all over, never did find him, had and left. You know what? A perfect example of the fact that I do not respond well when I'm insulted. You respond insult with insult, and it's something that God says, you know what? Those are opportunities to go against the pattern of this world. Those are opportunities for us to, it's not that you just stay around and you become a whipping boy and let somebody just abuse you. No, but you do not respond insult with insult, and those are moments where we can grow in humility. Because what we do in those moments is what we do is the next thing, we need to have a consistent pattern in our day where we take it to God. We take things to God. And this is this thing, you know, it's part of the Bible where it talks about being in prayer always. And this doesn't, you know, necessarily mean, okay, well, now I'm supposed to be in a quiet room on my knees all day. If that's something that God has called you to and you can do, well, then, you know, that's cool. But no, what I'm talking about here more often than not is that we need to have this attitude of prayer during the day where just like we're inhaling and we're exhaling, we're having this silent conversation with God. So before I go into a meeting, I say, God, would you help me in this meeting? I'm going to need to think clearly. God, would you help me? I want to be an encouragement to everybody in this room. God, would you help me be really creative when I'm in this meeting? God, I know there's going to be this difficult person in this meeting. Would you help me deal with him graciously? Would you help me not repay insult for insult and to be breathing? And then when insults come our way, taking them to God and helping him sort them out for us so that we don't have to respond with an insult back. When we take it to God, those are opportunities where we grow in humility. And it's so critical to do this because pride is one of those things that's very difficult to recognize in our own life. For some reason, it seems to be pretty easy to recognize in other people's lives, but in our own, it's really tough. I've heard it described, you know, it's kind of like trying to see your own eyeballs. It's just something that's really hard to see in yourself. And so we need help. We need help by taking things to God's to see pride in our own life. Because the problem is we don't, and what we all tend to do is we tend to misdiagnose problems in our life. Because we don't see that pride, we don't see the problem was not my office, the problem was the roots of pride that are running throughout my life. But it's very hard to see, so we tend to misdiagnose this. So we tend to think that the problem is my work, or the problem is my kids, or the problem is my neighbors, or whatever that is. And sometimes those are, you know, part of the problem, but very often at the root of things is actually pride, but we can't see it. But the problem is we misdiagnose problems and we reach for the wrong remedies. There's a few weeks ago, and it was a Friday night, and I was leaving the office, and kind of been one of those long weeks, and got in the elevator to go down to the parking garage, and another guy jumps on the elevator with me and the doors close, and we start doing, you know, kind of that elevator small talk, which actually, as an introvert, you know, is the best kind of small talk because it's very defined. It has a beginning and an end. You know, it lasts about 30 seconds, and then the doors open. Wherever you are in the conversation, bam, it's over. No awkward transition, no promises to call somebody, just you're on. So nice kind of small talk, elevator small talk. So we're having it, and he mentioned something, and it's kind of late on a Friday night to be finishing work. And I say, yeah, you know, it's been a long week. And he says, yeah, for me too. And then he says, and then tomorrow, Saturday morning, I have to get up and I have to go to my second job. And he starts talking about all these bills he has to pay. And he has to go to his second job. And because of that, he's not going to get to spend time with his daughter tomorrow. And it's bumming him out. I'm like, wow, you know, that's harsh, man. That is harsh. So we get to the bottom. The door's open. We get out and step into the parking garage. And he sets his bag down next to his incredibly expensive new sports car. Wow. I say, hey, elevator friend. Just a thought. Did you ever think that maybe you could trade in this really expensive sports car for just a simple, safe mode of transportation, pay your bills off, and then you could spend time with your daughter? Do you ever think about that plan B? Okay, actually, I didn't say that. But I was thinking it about a moment later. You know, I was thinking about it about a moment later. Now, what was going on there? Well, probably two possible things, maybe more, two possible things going on there. One was, I really think that he has fallen prey to the pattern of this world. And he somehow believes that he needs that car to define who he is, or at least who he looks to others. And he needs that to be happy so much that he will take a second job to pay for that car and sacrifice time with his daughter. I really feel that he's blinded to that, and he's fallen prey to the pattern of this world. And what's his problem is not working too much. That is not his problem. His problem is pride that has chosen him to make some unhealthy choices. So that's one possibility. The second possibility is that I have a problem of prideful judgmentalism because I get to know somebody for 30 seconds and think that I know what all their problems are just based on the kind of car they're driving. So there's that going on as well. And you know what? Could be either one of those or some mix of the two. The fact is, I think both of us, both he and I, have problems seeing this. And it's very difficult to see unless we're in some constant inhaling and exhaling conversation with God, where we're asking him to help sort these things out. So we practice being insulted. We take it to God. And then if you thought that, you know, kind of taking it to God, that's a funky thing, praying during the day, here, this is going to get even freakier for you, okay? The third answer to dealing with pride in our life is submission. Submission. Wow. You know, that's not a word, you know, that we like very much, because what we like is we like independence. We don't like to think not only that we are made for dependence vertically on our, with our Creator, but also that He created us for dependence horizontally with each other. That He's put other people in our life. We can be stronger, we can be healthier, we can be better if we are dependent on those around us. And so, for instance, for me, one of the ways that this kind of popped up for me was, it was about a year ago now, a little bit more a year ago, when Nancy and I were really sorting through and we were really feeling like I was being called to leave staff at Crossroads, to still be a volunteer here, but leave staff here in order to pursue this other thing that I felt like God was calling me to. Now, as an introvert, what I want to do is I want to make the decision myself and then move on. But I know that that is not a healthy mode. And so I have to take overt steps to lean into community around me when I'm doing this. So what I do was, and I did this in this situation, is I look around me and I look for people that fit three criteria. One, they know me very well. Two, I feel like they have my best interest at heart. And three, they have a track record of making healthy decisions in their own life. I look around me, and the people that best fit those three criteria, I kind of bring into the process. So in this case, I already had Nancy in the process. She fits that criteria. Then I brought my mom and dad into it. I brought Brian Tome in. I brought Darren Yates, who's our executive pastor here at Crossroads. And I brought Jerry, Usha, Tom, and Jim, the other four members of the board of directors here at Crossroads, into this process. And I said, okay, here's the deal. This is what I'm feeling that God's pulling me toward, but I want to submit to my community around me as part of this process. So here's the deal. One, I want you part of this process. You have complete permission to ask me any question without me being threatened. Two, you have complete permission to challenge me in any way that you want. And three, I need you to be praying for me. And so here's the deal. I said, let's take this summer. This was last year. Let's take this summer. We all pray about this. And I want to talk with you every once in a while and get your questions and talk about this. And you'd be praying about this for me. So we did that. I said, and if at the end of the summer I get together and I am getting a theme of spiritual red flags from you, I will put the brakes on this. I will not do it because I feel that seriously about the role of you as my community around me. But if I get affirmation from you on this and I'm still feeling this prompting, then I'm going to do this. And so at the end of the summer, we got together and, you know, along the way, there were some hard questions. There was some good conversation. There was a lot of prayer. And by the end of it, there was affirmation from everyone that they thought that this was something that I was to do. We have got to be willing to submit to community around us. Not only does it help us make better decisions, and it's not that in the end the decision wasn't mine, I have to own it, but it is yet another way that God roots pride out of our life because we're not doing it on our own. And so whether you're thinking about a job change, you're thinking about a move that you're going to make, you're thinking about someone that you might think is the right person to marry, you need to look around you for those people in your life and you need to submit those decisions to them as part of this process. You end up owning the decision, but you do not make it on your own. Now, you know, as part of all this, being insulted, you know, take it to God, submitting to community, there's one kind of section of our community I want to talk to for just a second here that I think there's a particular application for, a challenge for you. And that's those of you that work in a job where you create things. You know, for lack of a better term, the stereotype term would be you're a creative. Maybe you're a musician. Maybe you're a writer, maybe you're a graphic artist, you're a visual artist, you know, a poet, you know, whatever it would be, you create things for a living. For you, I think there's particular challenges in this pride thing because this world is not an easy one to create things in. Because unless you're a very, very rare bird, you are creating things in an environment where you put your heart into something, you create it, you put it out there, and then other people critique it. Other people who don't share your gifts, other people who may not be good communicators in an encouraging way, other people who may not even have your best interest at heart. And yet you have to create and put your heart out there and then they criticize it. And what happens is over time, if that happens in unhealthy ways, you get all these bruises. And as a creative, the only way you can survive in that is what you do is you start to not listen. Yeah, you patronize him because it's part of the political process. You need to do this or whatever. But you start to really just, I'm not going to listen because I can't live with this. And you kind of hold yourself off from that. And you know what? It becomes a survival mechanism for you and it works. Problem is it is far from the picture that God has given of what we're to do with our gifts. You know, the Bible talks about our gifts, whatever gifts, unique gifts that you have, talks about it in terms of it's not a gift to you. Talks about in terms of whatever gifts you have is a gift God has put in you for what the Bible says is it's for the common good. You're given gifts in you for other people. As an artist, you need to care what people think. As a musician, you need to care what the audience thinks. And so we've talked about that, you know, for years at Crossroads, the musicians we have are such gems. They're awesome. Because one, we look for some of the best musicians in the world, and they need to be people who care what other people think. They can't be these great musicians who say, I just do my thing, and people can take it or leave it. No, we look for people who are incredibly creative, who have creative humility. And it's a tough thing. It's a tough thing because, you know, what do you do with that? And most creatives, over time, you build up these reserves and these calluses where you just don't want to listen to other people. I ran into a little of this. It was just a couple months ago. It's part of the new work that I'm doing. A friend of mine and I ended up at this meeting out in Beverly Hills. And it was at this agency that has an incredible track record of creating some great entertainment things. And so their incredible track record had been very successful in the areas of entertainment. And we're out there meeting with them at their offices in Beverly Hills on this project. And you've got to respect the, you know, a lot of the work that they've done. Well, we're in there, and very early in the meeting, it comes out that both the person that I'm with and me, we both have a background that involves consumer products research and marketing, like understanding what the consumer needs and wants and then designing things based on that. And so having heard that, the founder and the head of this agency, he stands up toward the beginning of the meeting. He says, you know what? This might be a very short meeting. This might be a very short meeting. And he goes on to totally blast anything involving consumer research, how he has no respect for it whatsoever, and he does everything based on his gut. He does everything based on his gut, and that's what's got them to where they are. And if we don't like this, this is going to be a very short meeting. Wow. I'm like, raise my hand, and you know, and hey, you know what? Sorry, but we create things for other people. So this little ego express here, I think we're jumping off here, you know. Actually, again, I didn't actually say that. But I'm trying to get to be better about either not thinking these things or saying them. You know, it's got to, you know, got to be one or two. What I could see there in that guy, though, was that here's something, somebody incredibly creative. I really respect the work that he's done. But over time, he's been beaten up in some ways, and this is the way he's responded, his creative heart has responded. We can't be that way. What we have to do is we have to not absorb all this criticism that we get from everyone and just run off and act on all of it. But the other thing we can't do is we can't get to the place where we just hold ourselves up and not listen to it at all. What we have to be is this rare combination. And what God says we have to do is we have to listen to this, but not absorb it. We listen to it and then we take it to God. And we say, okay, God, what are the themes here? And what are the themes that I should be hearing that are truth for my life? Help me remember that and help me forget all the rest. And if we do that, then we become this incredible lethal combination of, and this applies to everyone here, kind of end of application, just the creatives. Application to everyone is when we become that in life, we become this rare gift of somebody who gets better and better in whatever their gifts are and more humble and more humble. And that's the kind of powerful combination that God uses. So, we practice being insulted. We learn to take it to God as just kind of this regular rhythm during the day of inhaling and exhaling and having this conversation with God so that we can identify those little pride moments along the way and grow through them. And we submit to community. When we do those things, we will find that over time, we are growing more and more into our humanity. We're kind of rehumanizing ourselves by getting out of the chair, following God's direction, letting Him be God and us be people. So during this series, that's what we're going to do. We're going to try to dig into this and just ask God to remove some of the blinders so we can see how maybe these roots of pride are affecting our life in ways that we weren't even aware of. And I think for some of us in here, you're married and things are not going well. As a matter of fact, they've been not going well for a while, and you have, you've basically kind of mentally checked out. And you've realized that you've gotten to the point in your marriage where the other person cares more than you do. And you've realized, almost by accident, but you've realized that that's given you a little power. You have a little leverage. You have a little control. And that other person, in the name of trying to save what you have, has come to you and said, hey, you know what? Why don't we both sit down with a counselor? And your first reaction has been, I don't think so. I don't think so. We don't need to go to some. I know what our problems are. We don't need to go to somebody else and have them tell us what our problems are. You know what? I don't need to go to somebody else and open up all our business to them. And that's your objection. But what really is just beneath the surface is pride. You're scared of getting out of the chair. And until you do, it's not only going to be the death of your marriage, it's going to be the death of your soul. Because you need to get out of the chair. Or maybe for you, your work has gotten to the point where you've had enough success that you have some real power. But in the last couple of years, it's become this thing of that you have started to think that all the people that work for you are there to serve you and you alone. And you like the chair. You like being in the chair. But you've never thought about just maybe instead. You think the problem is that you can't get all these people to do exactly what you want. When the problem is, you haven't realized that they're not there to serve you. You are there to serve them. And until you realize that, until you get out of the chair, it's not going to work. Or maybe for you, it is a friend. Or a former friend. And they're a former friend because of something they did. Or something they said, or something they didn't do, or something they didn't say. And it's been a while now. And you just have this kind of growing kind of bitterness in you. And you know the Bible calls you to forgive. And you say, yeah, I'll forgive. I'll forgive as soon as they come back and they make things right with me. or I'll forgive as soon as they come back and apologize, and they need to come back and grovel, and all these kind of revenge fantasies that you have in your head of, that's when I'll forgive. When you know what the Bible says is forgiveness is nothing about that. Forgiveness is about you, and it's about you letting go of these things, but you won't do it, and you kind of like that little nugget of bitterness you have that you can kind of bring up every once in a while and stew on. Because you don't want to let it go. Because then you would have to get out of the chair. And what God may be saying to you during this series is that's exactly what He wants you to do. Because He realizes your soul is starting to shrivel up because that bitterness is eating you alive and you need to get out of the chair. So our goal during this series is not that we become nicer people. I mean, that may be a byproduct of growing in humility, is that we become nicer. No, our goal is that we are after the heart of God. Is that from the very beginning, that's the way God created us for this relationship. And that is this God. That is this God that created us. This divine humility. That at one point actually took on flesh and came down and emptied himself to serve us and die for us. And it's that kind of divine humility that we are after, because that is when we will become the people that he created us to be. But at some point, we're going to have to get out of the chair. Let's pray. God, we want to be those kind of people. And we know that it's not easy. We just ask during these 4 weeks, you just would show us just one thing, God. Show us one thing where the problem that we thought has been misdiagnosed. And what's really driving that is this root of pride. And help us just bring it out. And we need you to do this for us, God. In Jesus' name, amen.